Locked On NBA, the biggest stories, the local experts. Every Monday, we dig into the biggest stories in the NBA with the Locked On Podcast Network hosts. We will stop in Brooklyn today to speak with Adam Armbrecht of Locked On Nets about the Kevin Durant contact tracing situation. We go to Los Angeles to speak with Anthony Irwin of Locked On Lakers about the early season struggles of Anthony Davis and what that may mean moving forward. And lastly, we go to New York to speak with Gavin Shaw of Locked On Knicks about the Knicks and their trade for Derrick Rose. It's all coming up. The biggest stories with the local experts on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to another week of Locked On NBA. I am your Monday host, Josh Lloyd. I'm also the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, and I'm the lead analyst at basketballmonster.com and at Yahoo Sports Australia. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com and use the promo code Locked On, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Lots of interesting stuff happening in the NBA. We're going to cover it for you today, including the trade of Derrick Rose back to the New York Knicks. So let's get to it. Now I'm joined by one of the hosts of the Locked On Nets podcast. Adam Armbrecht is here with me. Adam, Kevin Durant is out for the next few days. I believe he's available to return on the weekend. Do you want to just give us a brief overview of what on earth happened over the last couple of days here with Kevin Durant?
Yeah, I think, well, thanks for having me in, Josh, of course, but I think everybody has that question. Essentially, I mean, to give you the bullet points, an employee from the Nets traveled to and from the facility with Kevin Durant, driving him there, not wearing masks. That's what sparks the protocols for the NBA. The things that don't make any sense are that the protocols were in effect, but Durant was able to be in the locker room. He was able to go out on the floor, but then got pulled out while they ran the test on the employee. Ultimately, the test came back positive for the employee. Kevin Durant tested negative at every single step along the way. But ultimately, the protocols deem that he has to then be removed from the game. But nobody else has to be removed from the game. The game doesn't have to get stopped. Everybody else will go into protocols. Everyone else got tested. Everybody else came back negative. But there's this weird mechanism around this, and you know, we've touched on it on the show. I'm as big a proponent as anybody about the safety and health protocols and making sure that if the NBA is going forward with the season, that everyone does whatever they need to keep everyone healthy and safe. And yet, nothing about the way the NBA, and this isn't just specific to the Nets, but the way that they handle these circumstances feels like it is a well-organized and well-thought-out execution of a plan. And that's what means that Durant will not be on the floor. I believe he'll be able to return Friday to the team, and that would make him available Saturday against the Golden State Warriors.
I guess the other thing that's confusing, look, that whole situation was confusing. We heard James Harden talking about it. We heard, you know, lots of Nets saying, you know, what's going on? He was on the court with us. He was in the locker room with us. Why can we go on and why can't he? Durant has obviously taken to Twitter to air his frustrations at the situation as well. But I guess the other thing that it's pretty confusing is the fact that, you know, Durant's had COVID, and this is the second time he's out now with protocols. So I guess they're showing an abundance of caution there. But you know, he's had the disease already, and the reinfection rate, I believe, is pretty low. So I guess that's a relatively confusing thing. Now I'm with you on it, Adam. Like, you know, being cautious is completely, like, that is what they need to do. And with that spate of postponed games, it's really slowed down. Like, when was the last time we even had a postponed game? It feels like it's been a while. Maybe the start of last week. I don't even remember. It's been a while, yeah, knock on wood. But still, things like this are relatively confusing, and it has impacts on teams and, yeah, the way that they play. And the Nets obviously couldn't get over the line there against the Raptors in that game, that Durant had to be not start and then pulled during it. So it does have an impact on them. Now, in terms of, you know, having star power to cover Kevin Durant, I'd say that the Nets are going to be okay in that area. But it still is an issue in terms of, you know, getting these three to work together. Now, on a side note to that, you know, let me just divert our conversation. How have those three looked together? How are they figuring it out, do you think?
Oh, they've been fantastic. You know, to your point, Josh Harden, I'll say Josh Lloyd said it right here on the conversation. James Harden said in that post game, I think, about that continuity, right? He started to really speak to that element of, we need to figure out what we are together, how we work together, how all the parts are going to happen. What are the new roles going to look like on this team? The thing that I think has taken at least some people by surprise here in Harden's transition over from Houston is that he has very comfortably moved into a facilitator heavy role. We kind of thought, you know, Doug and myself talking about it, that, well, how will you balance with Kyrie? He's an on the ball guy. He's going to be the facilitator. What will Harden do when he's off ball? And we've made some jokes about Harden's willingness to kind of fade into the background when he is off ball. And that can just be kind of a habitual thing that he has from Houston when he wasn't the guy. There really wasn't anything for him to do in the action of the game. So they're still working through some of that, but you don't have to go too far back to that LA Clippers game. This is one of the best teams in the league. This is a team that has familiarity in their stars. They made some adjustments to their roster as well, adding guys like Ibaka, but they went toe-to-toe with them. And this is still in the process of figuring out what this team is going to look like. Obviously, there's the defensive piece of it, but that's not why you make moves like this. You bring in these three players together and you say, can you run with us offensively for a full 48? And I think by the time we make our way to the playoffs, it should be a situation where most teams are going to come up short in that type of battle.
Let's talk about one of the other positions in the starting lineup. We know three of those spots are secure. Joe Harris, yeah, he's moved back and forward from the bench to the starting lineup. You think he's locked in there. But the center spot, DeAndre Jordan, with no other centers on the roster, has been playing like 20 minutes a night. Norval Powell finally got into a game across the weekend and fouled out in about 16 minutes. Nick Claxton,
as one does,
yeah,
well, just how you draw it up, by the way.
Yeah, when you've got six fouls and limited minutes, you might as well get your money's worth, which is exactly what Norval did. Jeff Green's been playing a ton of center. How much of an issue is this lack of adequate center play? Do you think? Do you think the Nets would feel comfortable going in there with 30 minutes or 25 minutes of Jeff Green at center? Are they relying or hoping on Nick Claxton to return and give them 20 minutes alongside, in addition to DeAndre Jordan's 20 minutes? Because they're obviously not feeling comfortable with Jordan playing big minutes, because honestly, if there was ever a situation for him to go back to playing 30 plus, it would be a time when there is literally no other center on the roster and it's not happening. So they're not comfortable with him there. But are they comfortable with just running small the entire time?
Yeah, it was interesting because when they made the trade and obviously it ended up sending Jared Allen ultimately to Cleveland, you thought, boy, is this the, okay, DeAndre Jordan, he's the friend of everybody on this roster. He's the superstar's buddy. So here we go back into the starting rotation. And actually, his minutes have diminished since that trade occurred. And to your point, you've seen more Jeff Green. You've seen really small ball lineups. We just highlighted last week on the show how the small ball lineup and the effectiveness of Jeff Green, the reliability and consistency that he's kind of shown here. You don't expect some of his really high numbers from the perimeter to hold up long term, but he has been really consistent for them, as has Joe Harris. The Claxton piece, I have to assume, looms pretty large. The organization liked him last year, obviously didn't get a big sample size, but he is in year number two. And again, KD, Kyrie, Harden, what you really need on a team that's going to be small no matter what, by the way, we can all dream on the Drummond buyout scenario, you know, Larry Nance having an injury, being out for 4 to 6 weeks. Who knows what that looks like for Cleveland now in terms of trying to tread water. So you can dream about the possible guys that are going to come in. You have to kind of assume it's going to be Pell. And then when Claxton comes back, you just need energy bodies to get some rebounds. Really avoid the second chance opportunities when you're on the defensive end. Try to get a couple of those offensive rebounds, but deny a little bit of paint entry. And that's the task. This isn't about, you know, be a guy that could go to the All-Star game. This isn't about be a rebound leader in the league. It's just be serviceable in support of the superstar. So, you know, ideal, no, but I'll be very curious to see as Claxton's, I mean, you want to think a week or two over the next couple of weeks, we could see him start to get ramped up for some playing time. When he comes back, it'll be interesting to see how the Claxton, Pell, and then even DeAndre Jordan piece works and how heavily this team and Steve Nash chooses to still lean into the Jeff Green small ball unit, because that'll kind of tell you how they really feel about the five overall and what they think their best chance to win when it comes to the playoffs is really going to look like.
Well, we're going to see all this stuff evolve over the next few weeks as Claxton does return and then Durant in and out of the lineup, and this is, they get more familiar with each other. And it's going to be intriguing to watch. The Nets, one of the teams favored to win the NBA title. Adam, you and Doug will have that covered for us all over on Locked On Nets. Thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
Thanks as always, Josh.
This episode is brought to you by 1010. Now, you may have read about this in the New York Times, InStyle magazine, or Forbes, and we're excited to tell you about it. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful commitment ring. They're available now exclusively at BlueNile.com, and when they're gone, they're gone. We all know that the diamond engagement ring is iconic. It's a timeless expression of the deepest commitment between two people. And with 1010, it's been beautifully re-envisaged in the hands of 10 modern designers working exclusively with sustainably sourced diamonds. If you're ready to mark a special commitment or looking for a unique and meaningful way to celebrate Valentine's Day, you're going to definitely want to check this out. Again, this exciting limited edition collection of diamond engagement rings is now available exclusively at BlueNile.com. We're covering everything you need to know about the NBA, but what about the rest of sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get podcasts. Now let's bring in the host of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Anthony Irwin is here with me. The Lakers just going about their business right up the top of the Western Conference. Lucky for them, they probably won't have to face the Detroit Pistons in the NBA Finals if they do happen to get there. Anthony, after just squeaking out a win on Saturday against the Pistons after losing to them the week before. But let's Lakers team, let's sort of get an overview of where they're sitting. And the first player I want to talk to you about is Anthony Davis. Because, yeah, there was discussions, Anthony Davis, Defensive Player of the Year last year. Anthony Davis, is he more of an MVP candidate than LeBron James? And he hasn't been that guy this year. Like, he is... he's not quite there. Now, admittedly, I haven't watched every single minute of every Lakers game like you have, so you can give me a little bit more insight. But what is... am I overblowing the concerns of Davis just not being at his best? Is he taking it easy? Is there something else going on? Why can't he hit free throws? There are a lot of questions here, because Davis just doesn't quite seem as locked in as we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I would say... concerns, I think, is a bit too strong of a word, because I don't think anybody is really, you know, nervous that he'll never turn it around this season. I just think he has said that he came into training camp still kind of dinged up from the season before. He is somebody like the reason, part of the reason why he came to the Lakers is so that he could kind of sleepwalk through stretches of the season and the team that he plays for just doesn't fall off of a cliff. Like New Orleans, when he was there, if he ever was not anything less than God mode Anthony Davis, that organization really struggled. So the idea of coming to the Lakers and playing with LeBron James and being able to on occasion just kind of take it easy for a little while is something that I think he was really looking forward to. Now, all that said, if you would have told me heading into the season that the stretch of him just kind of taking it easy would last this long, I would say that's a very surprising aspect of this. He has been saying a lot that he's kind of frustrated with his own play, which, you know, he kind of controls. And then the last thing here that I think is a big factor is the Lakers just don't really make life all that easy on him offensively. And it's kind of hard to say how much of that is his own choice and you know, the way that he would prefer to play, where it's a lot of isolation, a lot of just kind of straight post-ups and a lot of mid-range fadeaway jumpers, or if, you know, it's by design because of the other weapons that the Lakers now have on their roster and the way that they're playing now. So I would say eventually we'll get a more consistently engaged AD just as the season goes along and he kind of starts getting ready for the next postseason. And then the hope also is that as that happens, the Lakers start involving him more in plays that get him moving towards the basket on the catch rather than catching it all the time at a standstill with all of the defense's eyes just kind of focused on him with the basketball.
Do you think that there's obviously always going to be adjustment issues with new players, but having Dennis Schroeder replacing Rajon Rondo or Avery Bradley, however you want to phrase it, and Montrezl Harrell and Marc Gasol replacing JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard, that the way that those guys play is very, very different. And especially talking about Schroeder and Harrell, is they're players who really need a lot of the ball in their hands. They're not particularly good outside shooters. Schroeder's at about 30%. Harrell just doesn't take any of those shots. Not to say that McGee or Howard was doing that. But they also, you know, Dwight and JaVale also knew their role. It was like, get out of the way and let Anthony Davis do his thing. And do you think there is a level of, I don't know, maybe deference from Davis? Well, I know Montrez needs to get his, and he signed here on the cheap to help us out, and I've got to let him get his shots, and maybe a little bit of that rather than like, no, look, just give me the ball, and Dennis, you shut up and stand over there, and Montrez, you just get out of the way, versus we just got to get these guys involved in things, and the positioning's a little bit off with where they all fit compared to where it was last year, and just that completely different style of player, which I think was some of the concerns I had with those signings, is those guys just need so much of the ball to do what led them to be sixth man of the year candidates, that it wouldn't necessarily be as smooth just sliding them in for the Lakers. And while it is impacting both of Schroeder and Harrell's game, I think it might be having an impact on Davis as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're talking about two guys who, you know, Schroeder likes to operate in the pick and roll. And when he operates in the pick and roll, he's not the kind of player who makes life all that easy on the roller, right?
No, he does not.
When he goes around a screen, he's looking to get to the basket. You know, he's looking to create for himself, and then at the last second, if he sees that he can't quite create for himself, it's usually more of a look at the opposite corner more than it is, you know, whatever the roller is doing later in that set. And so, like, I think that getting into a rhythm with him has been kind of a project. Going from Dwight and JaVale to Mark Gasol is an interesting one too, because on one hand you say, well, Gasol can shoot in, you know, a lot better than those guys can. So you're thinking, yeah, he's going to provide a little bit more spacing for AD when AD wants to, you know, really kind of go to work. The problem is the Lakers are only using Gasol in that way. Like, that's basically it. When he and AD are out there, and the only way that Gasol is really kind of helping AD is via that spacing. And by the way, you know, Mark isn't really shooting the ball all that well. So that, you know, the defense has kind of decided, because of the way Gasol is shooting and because of his own reluctance to shoot, defenses have kind of said, well, we'd rather risk it and leave Gasol more open than just allow AD to be on an island with whoever is guarding him. So in theory, it could have worked maybe a little bit better than Dwight and JaVale, just because there's more space to operate in. But in practice, we haven't quite seen that quite yet. And then the other thing too is Gasol, like, if you don't have the ball in his hands and if you aren't allowing him to operate at the top of the key as the facilitator that he is, you aren't getting the most out of his game either. So AD has kind of made the most sacrifices of I would argue anybody on the roster to this point. And, you know, at some point this year, the Lakers are really kind of have to say, hey, actually, that's going to have to switch. Like, you guys are going to have to start sacrificing so that arguably the most talented player in the NBA can get his.
Yeah, it is going to be interesting to see. And they've got a bit of time to figure this out. And it's not like, you know, the sky is falling or anything like that, because they're winning plenty of games and they're right up the top. But, yeah, you want your best players to be, yeah, at the top of their game when it comes down to the business end of the season. And Anthony Davis isn't there. And, you know, he's got to make that adjustment. The team's got to make that adjustment. Guys like, you know, Schroeder and Harrell need to make those adjustments as well to help get the best out of Anthony Davis. And it's going to be interesting to see how that all does play out. Anthony, you're going to have that all covered for us over on Locked On Lakers as this team, you know, continues chugging along, but also figures things out and, you know, rounds themselves into playoff form over the coming weeks and months. Thanks for coming on Locked On NBA with me.
Anytime, man. Thanks for having me.
BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all sports action. The Super Bowl is on today. It's probably over by the time you're listening to this. So, you know, what else are you going to do? Well, you can bet on the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL. Those seasons are right in the middle of things. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit by using the code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Built Bar is back. The best tasting protein bar ever is back with 6 new flavors. And the guys at Built Bar say that they're even deliciouser. Now, I know that's not a word, but how else am I going to describe these protein bars that taste like candy bars? Deliciouser works for me. 6 new flavors: caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate and they're soft and easy to chew. Helpful to maintain your current weight or if you're looking to shed a few pounds while indulging in a delicious treat. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. The new cookies and cream bar has 17 grams of protein with 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and just 4 grams of net carbs. So go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 20% off your next order. The promo code is LOCKEDON for 20% off at builtbar.com. 2020 is mercifully over. It's time for a fresh start and a few more wins. If you're betting this year and want more wins, listen to Locked On Bets with your boy Q and Lee Sterling of Paramount Sports. They are picking college basketball, NBA, NHL locks all winter long. Subscribe to Locked On Bets wherever you get podcasts. Now let's bring in one of the hosts of the Locked On Knicks podcast. Alex Wolf is here with me. Alex, the New York Knicks, they're about to party like it's 2017, 16, I guess. I don't know. I can't remember when Derrick Rose was there with the New York Knicks.
16, 17, yeah.
There it is.
Forgettable time.
16, 17. Derrick Rose is back. He's coming across to the Knicks in exchange for Dennis Smith Jr. and a second round draft pick. I have been critical of this deal, not to say that Derrick Rose can't have an impact because he was quite good last year, but he's been bad this year. I don't think there's any debate about that. He's constantly injured, and I just don't know what the Knicks are thinking here with this trade. Like, do they think that they're a top four seed chance? Do they think that Rose is this huge upgrade that's going to take them, I don't know where? Like, all I can think of is that Tom Thibodeau said, "I like Derrick Rose, can we have him?" And they said, "Sure, Tom, here you go." Like, I don't really understand. Maybe you can enlighten me as to what the rationale might be in this trade.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a vacuum, you know, we talked about this on Locked On Knicks in our reaction pod. Like, I think it's a good enough deal for the Knicks in a vacuum. Like, they have four picks coming up in this upcoming draft. So they had their own first, Dallas's first, and the Pistons second, as well as that Charlotte second that they're now apparently sending for Rose. There was no way they were going to use all four of those picks. So sending off the fourth one, you know, the least favorable of those four, doesn't seem like a huge deal. Dennis Smith Jr., I mean, I'm sure I don't have to tell you, like, I don't think he's an NBA player at this point. So basically the Pistons, I guess, are taking a flyer on him. And then Rose, like, the sad part is if this is a straight up one-for-one swap of Derrick Rose taking Elfrid Payton's minutes, Derrick Rose would be an upgrade. Because Derrick Rose can at least shoot the three off the dribble a little bit, which Payton can't shoot the three off the dribble or spot up. I think Rose more or less has almost the same game as Elfrid in every other aspect. They're both primarily driving point guards that thrive at getting towards the rim. Rose's assist percentage, I was looking, has actually been really high the last 2 years, even this year with how relatively meh he's been playing. His assist percentage has been over 30, which is not half bad. Meanwhile, Elfrid Payton's assist percentage is at 20% this year, which can partly be attributed to Julius Randle running the offense in many times, but also just Elfrid's just not a good passer. Like, if he's driving in, he's not looking to drive and kick. He's looking to drive and take a shot. He's not really looking towards the corners or to the, you know, above the break or anything else to try to create a three for someone or look for a cutter or anything like that. He's kind of just tunnel visioned on getting inside. I think the main thing, you know, particularly if we're talking about this from a fantasy perspective, is some people were probably doing victory laps when they picked up Emmanuel Quickley in fantasy recently. And that's the biggest thing that worries Knicks fans from a big picture perspective is, you know, because of Tibbs's love for veterans, it's been an uphill struggle for Quickly all year anyway to get minutes. And, you know, even with how well Quickly has played, all it took was Elfrid Payton, you know, scoring 20 points on mostly uncontested layups that the Bulls were giving him for some reason. And all of a sudden this narrative restarted of like, oh, Elfrid Payton's refound his game, whatever. And Quickly's back to playing like 12 minutes a game. So if there's no plans to basically replace Payton with Rose, then, you know, as a Knicks fan, you're already starting to worry about, oh, now we're going to have 48 minutes of either Derrick Rose or Elfrid Payton at the starting or, you know, at the point guard spot. And then Quickly, I guess, just being thrust into some off ball role or something for like 10 to 15 minutes a game, which is not ideal.
That's the question, I guess, is that Quickly, he had this little stretch where he played like 29 minutes a night, shot the ball really well. All Knicks fans are clamoring. They've been doing it all year. And the question continually is asked to Thibodeau, and he keeps saying, no, I like our lineup because I like having Elfrid Payton in there for defensive purposes. I like what he provides defensively. We know, you know, if Tibbs is going to get excited over anything, it's going to be someone who's played in the league for multiple seasons and someone who defends. I think that rationale will ring pretty hollow if he gets replaced by Derrick Rose, because Derrick Rose is a lot of things. A good defender is not one of them. So that excuse then holds zero water if that's the way they decide to go. And then if they decide to go that route of just having Payton and Rose playing those 48 minutes, it does nothing for the development of this team and, you know, the idea of, you know, Tom Thibodeau sacrificing things in the future to win the game tomorrow. It doesn't make a huge amount of sense. Now, you can easily argue to me that Rose is an upgrade over Payton, and that's fine. He's also 32 years of age, had already multiple injuries this season, can't stay healthy, can't play big minutes, and has not played particularly well. You're right about the passing being better this year. He's shooting at a better rate than Elfrid Payton, and all that stuff is true. But if it is at the expense of Emmanuel Quickly, I'd be pretty irate if I was a Knicks fan, just because of the way that Tibbs is just continually stuck in 2011 and that quote that he had today or yesterday, was, I don't remember when it was, and they said, you know, what do you say about the thing that you don't develop young players? And his immediate thing was, well, Derrick Rose was the youngest MVP in 2011. Like, he's just stuck on that time frame. They've won more games this year. They're still under 500. And I just worry about, the benefit of the doubt is here at the moment, Alex, but I just worry a little bit about what this means for that rotation and how much that angers the fan. Well, okay, you can answer me this, because I talk about this often, you know, tweet about it, and people are like, that's great, the Knicks need to win. How does the fan base feel about, say, finishing, let's say, 33 and whatever the equivalent number is there, 39, right, for the season? And sneaking into the ninth spot in the play-in, and if that means that Emmanuel Quickly is out of the rotation, how would the general fan base feel about that? Hey, look at us, we're in the playoff mix again, but our most promising young player is just, you know, cast aside to get us to that spot.
I think that would upset a lot of people. You know, I think thus far what's been nice, and you know, I give Tibbs credit. Like, I think he actually has been in many ways patient and developing certain guys on the team, like RJ Barrett. You know, I think he's given an exceeding amount of patience to, and a lot of leash, you know, of like,
until today.
And I mean, you know, I'm not going to make a big deal out of it. You know, it's one game. But by and large, I mean, even when RJ was in that 0-for-21 stretch or whatever from three, he kept letting him out there for 35 minutes a game. Granted, the Knicks were a little injured at the time too, so it was kind of a necessity, but you know, I think he's done a good job with helping push him along. Obviously, Julius Randle's resurgence this season, I think, has a lot to do with the fact that he has an actual coach that's actually putting him in a position to succeed.
Absolutely.
Which is a big deal. Mitchell Robinson, I think he's given, you know, a lot of playing time to, by and large, and given him a pretty big leash too, as far as, you know, other than foul trouble, which you can't really give a guy a big leash for, but everything else, I think he's been pretty good with that. But yeah, with the Quickly thing, it's, you know, it's a little frustrating. It seems like the Knicks fan base is kind of like snake bitten as far as young point guards, because there was the whole Frank Ntilikina thing for years now. I mean, a lot of us thought that Frank Ntilikina was for sure gone in this deal.
Yeah.
it was a little surprising to see that he wasn't. But you know, we've been clamoring for him to play for so many years, and the Knicks keep trotting out, you know, Jarrett Jack and Emmanuel Mudiay and all these other guys that don't have any future with the team and keep blocking him. You know, Elfrid Payton last year too. So it's a little frustrating from that perspective to see the Knicks make this move. To get back to like your other question though, like if the Knicks went 33-39 and they snuck into the ninth seed, but quickly wasn't a big part of that, I think the Knicks fan base is very split in two. Like one half would be ecstatic about making the play in and, you know, being back in a playoff situation. They would say, look, this is growth. You know, and getting to that point still would mean that, you know, RJ, Julius, and Mitch all had a big, you know, thing to do with it. But on a separate token, like the other part of the fan base would be more like, yeah, but at what cost? You know, why were you playing Peyton and Rose and letting quickly rot on the bench this whole time? You know, when quickly is the guy that you should be prioritizing, like wins and losses don't really matter this year. It's a really good draft. So if you can narrowly miss the playoffs, like that might actually be the best option. You know, even missing the play-in games, coming like 11th in the East, that might be the way to go, because then you get a better chance at, you know, Cade, Kuminga, Mobley, you know, Jalen Green.
Suggs. There's millions Suggs. Of them. There's heaps of them.
But yeah, there's just so many guys, you know, and the Mavs too. There's a very real chance that if the Knicks, you know, just play their youth this year and show progress but don't necessarily make the playoffs, that then if the Mavs continue to you know, underperform as well, you might have two lottery picks in this draft. And that's huge, man. This is like a really big draft. So yeah, there would definitely be a split among the fans. I would probably fall somewhere in the middle. I'm all right with living in the moment and enjoying the fact that they make the playoffs. But I would also be really upset if we saw this immense talent from quickly early in the season. And then, you know, he just ends up buried to end the season. That would be really disappointing to me, because I think I thought quickly was good enough to start, you know, 10 games ago. And he's still, you know, he's been scoring like most games. He scores almost a point a minute off the bench. It's just insane. Plus dishing out assists and everything else. So I can't really see the justification for, and he's doing it efficiently. That's the other thing. So I can't really see the justification for sitting him down in favor of Rose and leaving Peyton with as big of a role in the rotation as well.
Well, it's going to be one of the things that I'm watching the most over the next couple of days. Alex, you will have it covered for us all over on Locked On Knicks. Thanks for coming on Locked On NBA with me.
Yeah, of course, Josh. It was a pleasure.
And that'll do it for another episode of Locked On NBA. Make sure you're subscribing to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Spotify. Go throw us that 5-star review on Apple Podcasts as well. Tell your friends, share it on social media. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall as well as the Locked On NBA account at Locked On NBA Pods over on Twitter. And we've got an Instagram presence. You can go check us out over there as well. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.